From WNYC in New York, this is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer, and now the 2013's in the rearview mirror, it's time to look at what's ahead in 2014. Of course, if you missed any of our week-long series of shows looking back at the best of last year, you can find it all on soundcheck.org. Why New York music ruled the world, the best live performances of the year, and a couple of best-of lists from our guest critics. Turns out last year was a pretty good year for women in music, which, now that I say it, sounds pretty stupid, doesn't it? Because they've all been good years for women in music recently. Adele, Madonna, Lady Gaga, Beyonce, Rihanna, Katy Perry, etc. And let's see how our 2014 preview in just a moment shapes up gender-wise. But there was one young woman in particular, a 17-year-old from New Zealand, who grabbed everyone's attention in 2013. That was Lorde, with her hit song Royals. You had to work pretty hard to miss this one in 2013, but even if you've heard the song a lot, you've never heard it like this. Live on Soundcheck, here is our musical guest, Pentatonix, with their a cappella arrangement of Royals by Lorde.
I've never seen a diamond in the flesh. I cut my teeth on wedding rings in the movies. And I'm not proud of my address. In a torn up town, no postcode envy. But every song's like gold teeth, gray goose dripping in the bathroom, bloodstains, ball gowns, trash in our hotel room. We don't care. We're driving Cadillacs in our dreams, but everybody's like crystal, Maybach, diamonds on your timepiece, jet planes, islands, tigers on a gold leash. We don't care. We aren't caught up in your love affair, and we'll never be royals. It don't run in our blood. This kind of love's just ain't for us. We crave a different kind of buzz. Let me be your ruler.
You can call me queen.
My friends and I, we've cracked the code. We count our dollars on the train to the party. And everyone who knows us knows that we're fine with this. We didn't come from money, but every song like gold teeth, gray goose dripping in the bathroom, bloodstains, ball gowns, trash in the hotel room. We don't care. We're driving Cadillacs in our dreams, but everybody's like crystal, Maybach, diamonds on your timepiece, jet planes, islands, tigers on a gold leash. We don't care. We're not caught up in your love affair, and we'll never be royals. It don't run in our blood. This kind of love's just ain't for us. We crave a different kind of buzz. Let me be your ruler. You can call me queen. Life is great without a care. We're not caught up in your love affair. We're bigger than we've ever dreamed. And I'm in love with being and we'll never be royals. It don't run in our blood. This kind of luck's just ain't for us. We crave a different kind of buzz. Let me be your ruler.
That's Pentatonix, the NBC Sing-Off winners from a couple of seasons ago, with their arrangement of one of the songs of 2013, Royals by Lorde. We'll meet the five members of Pentatonix in a bit and hear some more music live in the Soundcheck studio, although I do want to point out that the beatboxing here was done by Kevin Olushola, who does a pretty good approximation of a drum kit. And later on the show, we'll hear about another kind of quasi-drum kit as we explore the strange history of the drum machine. Okay, but now let's get our heads out of the old year and into the new. Tris McCall is music critic for the New Jersey Star-Ledger and joins us here in the Soundcheck studio today with a preview of some of the new music headed our way early in this new year. Tris, good to have you back.
Great to be here. Thank you.
So is this, you know, the beginning of the year, is this a particularly important time for the music community?
You know, usually it isn't. Usually this is the time of the year when albums that aren't quite as hyped come out, but you sometimes get albums that really surprise you.
So this is the time of year where you will see a number one album with like 40,000 sales.
I remember the Decemberists hit number one around this time of the year. Amos Lee had a number one album this time of the year. It's a pretty good strategy, and you do get surprised early in the year.
Well, now, taking a look at some of the things you're watching out for, let's start in England with Katie B.
Yeah, Katie B has an album coming out called Little Red, and you know, there's been so much interesting electronic music that has come out of England and out of Europe in the last few years. And the challenge with a lot of this stuff, because much of it is jagged-edged, is how do we make this work in a pop context? I mean, how do we get a pop singer to sing over this? And a lot of the American attempts to do that have been clumsy.
So is this kind of, you know, post-dubstep music?
You could call it post-dubstep. I think dubstep has gotten a bad association in America with aggressive music.
Right.
James Blake would tell you that the real dubstep is subtle, is all about nuance and texture. And Katie B kind of does that too. But more than anybody else, I think she's been able to take those ideas from dubstep and project her own personality and not get run over by the dubstep truck.
Right.
And I think that she did that on her last record, which was called On a Mission. I think Katie B's On a Mission was her last album, and I'm expecting her to take it even further on the new record because the new single is very interesting.
Here's 5 a.m. by Katie B from her album Little Red, set for a February 3rd release.
My feet won't stop, I can't keep still. Be rocking this until the sunlight. That beat's so sick, that tune's so
from the UK. 5 a.m. is a song from her forthcoming record Little Red, set for release on February 3rd. Tris McCall, a music critic of the New Jersey Star-Ledger, telling us about some new music headed our way in this new year. All right, so you got something a little closer to home for us to look forward to?
Sure. Hospitality is a band from right here in New York, and their front woman, Amber Papini, is a very interesting songwriter in the way that she puts her stuff together formally. There's a lot of camera obscura in what she does. There's a lot of Belle and Sebastian in what she does. There's a lot of Elvis Costello in the way that she writes her songs. And her musicians are really attentive to the wrinkles in the songs that she writes, all of which are kind of unusual. The last record that they did, which was actually their debut, was an album that I found inexhaustible. And in a year where there was no Belle and Sebastian album, for me it was the Belle and Sebastian album of the year. So when I had that craving for something like If You're Feeling Sinister, that's where I would turn. Now, I've heard that they've gotten a little more aggressive for their new record.
Yeah, because Belle and Sebastian, you know, we associate with a certain
twee.
Yes.
You know, that kind of Scottish artsy quality.
I think
you could call...
Well, it's also a relationship to the backbeat and the way that the drummer and bass player plays. There's a bounciness to it. And Hospitality is a bouncy group. But at the same time, Amber Papini, her melodies are always strange. There's always something a little off-kilter. There's a sense that there's something mystical happening in the woods and the stories that she's telling about New York and being young and traveling around the city. There's always this kind of magical, almost children's story dimension to what she's doing.
So Hospitality, a trio from Brooklyn, fronted by Amber Papini, who's the singer and guitarist and songwriter in the band. January 28th is the release date for their new album called Trouble.
Looking at yourself a lot, standing in the glass with a costume on, both knowing that you were caught, off with dresses and parasols, rhinestone rings and high heel soles, right.
Is Hospitality and a song called Going Out from their second album called Trouble. Comes out January 28th, so we don't have to wait too long for this one, Tris.
Yeah.
All right, so let's move on to another New York-based artist, Azalea Banks. Now, we've been hearing her name for a long time.
A long time now.
Where's the record been?
That's been a question that a lot of people have been wondering, and It's long overdue at this point because she's like I think a lot of hip hop artists have recently fallen into the trap of being more famous for their tweeting or being more famous for social media than they are for the music that they're making. Now, Azalea Banks has tremendous potential. Anyone who heard the song 212, which is going to be on the new album, knows that she has tremendous skills. She can do lots of different voices. She can project a tremendous amount of personality. She can really get in the listener's face through the record. I think really she's an MC, really one of the most exciting MCs to emerge from New York in a long time. But we've been waiting for the album now.
Yeah,
She's had a couple of different false starts. She's done some interesting guest features. She's appeared on other people's records. She's been on, she's had EPs, she's had mixtapes. But the album Broke with Expensive Taste that we were promised a long time ago is supposed to come out early in 2014. And if it does, it'll really be the first big, important hip-hop album of the year.
Tell me what you want to do. I got Rex, Rex, Rex to the ATM jam. Tell me what you want to do. You the bad, a bad, but don't get lost in the fad. Got Rex, Rex, Rex to the ATM jam. Tell me what you want to do.
Thank you, Dolly, by the Barbie. I can admit I like the party. I spent the grip, I swipes the cardi. When the high summer drips, my pricey garmy. I'm the swami, I see hip hop. I'm freaky fit that, I got rip that. Ice on a wrist like ice to fish that. When I dip with a that's spicy, get that.
I got racks, racks, racks to the ATM jam. Tell me what you wanna do. I got racks, racks, racks to the ATM jam. Tell me what you wanna do.
That is Azalea Banks featuring Pharrell Williams, and ATM Jam, one of the numerous singles that she's released here in New York over the years, has kind of built up a certain amount of hype, and people have just been waiting for the record.
Yeah. She's one of these artists who it seems like she's got something important that she's going to get to. I'm hopeful for this one.
Broke with Expensive Taste will be the album from Azalea Banks. No release date, but supposed to happen soon.
Yeah.
We're talking with Tris McCall of the New Jersey Star-Ledger, giving us a preview of some of the new stuff headed our way. And on a list that is very heavily weighted towards women front people, I was almost said women frontmen, St. Vincent is next, the singer and guitarist Annie Clark.
St. Vincent is really a fascinating project. In many ways, one of the reasons why it's fascinating is because Annie Clark is a tremendous guitar player, and everyone who's ever heard her play knows this about her, not just in the notes that she plays, but in the sounds that she's able to get. One of the things that really makes St. Vincent special is that And especially, this was definitely true from her last record with Saint Vincent, which was called Strange Mercy, which came out 2011, was one of the best rock records of that year.
Right.
It's really an album-long anxiety attack. The whole record is about anxiety.
Well, a lot of her guitar playing is very kind of angular and anxious and edgy.
But then she did the album with David Byrne, which was a completely different mood. It was almost celebratory, where both of them were kind of taking their music in directions that they'd never taken it before.
And the big brass band.
I loved that album. And it was a completely different look for St. Vincent. She'd never done anything like that before. And the new song is a little more, maybe a little poppier, maybe a little more aggressive, maybe a little less anxious than some of her other material. But it's still there. You can tell that the anxiety is still there.
So this is from the forthcoming album.
Yes, called St. Vincent.
Called St. Vincent from Annie Clark, who records as St. Vincent, and the album is due on February 25th. That is St. Vincent, a.k.a. Annie Clark, and a song called Birth in Reverse from her forthcoming album, also called St. Vincent, due on February 25th. She'll be headlining a show at Terminal 5 the next night, February 26th. Something to look forward to. Early in 2014, Tris McCall of the New Jersey Star-Ledger with us on Soundcheck today. Still kind of an edgy sound to that song.
This is going to be a very cool record, you can tell.
What else is on the horizon?
There's the Broken Bells Project, which is James Mercer from The Shins. And
Danger Mouse, the noted producer.
And Danger Mouse. And I think it's going to be interesting because the last Shins record was pretty polarizing. There were a lot of people who thought it was way too slick and that there was no real band feel to it. When he does Broken Bells, of course, he's pushing it even more pop direction. I know it's going to be called After the Disco, and the first single sounds like the Bee Gees. It's amazing how much it sounds like the Bee Gees.
Yeah.
Like, you would think it was the Bee Gees if you heard it on the radio. And as a New Jersey person, we got to say that Springsteen's on the horizon. He's got a new record coming out called High Hopes, and it's really...
It is not the High Hopes that you might be thinking
of. No, it's not the Sinatra High Hopes, although that would be pretty cool. It's a different High Hopes, a song that he's covered a lot. And the album is going to contain songs that have been floating around the Springsteen discography for a long time. If you've seen him live a bunch, you might have heard those songs.
So people who've seen him sing his Amadou Diallo song, the song about the shooting of Amadou Diallo.
It's going to be the first time
American Skin.
Yeah, that American Skin is going to be on an album. For him, that's become a very important song. And on the Wrecking Ball tour, it was one of the cornerstones of the set.
Yeah.
On many nights at the Wrecking Ball tour.
So there are a number of these songs that he's been playing for a while.
Yes.
Some of them he's released on EPs, just never gotten around to putting them out on an album.
Right. So where Wrecking Ball was an attempt for him to engage with the world, this is really more for the Springsteen aficionado, for the person who is more into. But we'll see. And we'll see how much it connects.
The thing that strikes me about the forthcoming Springsteen record is the collaboration with Tom Morello.
Yes.
The guitarist from Rage Against the Machine and Audio Slave, a very politically agitated figure.
Right, and it kind of extends many of the themes from Wrecking Ball. And I think Tom Morello showed up, he played with Springsteen on the Australian dates when Little Steve couldn't do those shows. There's something that Tom Morello brings to Springsteen's music that nobody else can. It's a kind of, you can hear the political agitation in the way that he plays. And I know that that means a lot to Springsteen. And yet, if I may criticize our favorite son, it's bizarre to me that he wouldn't cut this stuff with the E Street Band. He's got the band playing as well as they have ever played. Anybody who saw the Wrecking Ball tour knows that this is true. And you've seen Springsteen for many years. That band was outrageous on this tour. They were doing four-hour concerts. Max was there. Max Weinberg, the drummer, was there for 4 hours playing his heart out. And you feel like there's got to be a way to capture that energy on record, because the last few Springsteen albums haven't had it. They haven't really had the E Street Band energy to them. There is some frustration with Springsteen's production choices over the last couple of records. I wish he could use the band more than he has.
Well, listen to, I mean, you'll have no trouble identifying the squall of Tom Morello's guitar on the new Springsteen record, which is called High Hopes and comes out very soon. January 14th is the release date. And Tris McCall is the music critic of the New Jersey Star-Ledger, giving us a look ahead. Tris, Happy New Year. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Monday morning runs, Sunday night screaming, slow me down before the New Year dies. Well, it won't take much to kill a loving smile and every mother with a baby crying in her arms singing.
Up next, at the start of the show, we gave you a taste of the young vocal group called Pentatonix. We'll hear more from these champions of the reality show The Sing-Off next. And later, a history of the drum machine from a guy who owns no fewer than 150 of them. This is Soundcheck.
Buy it, use it, break it, fix it, trash it, change it, mail, upgrade it, charge it, point it, zoom it, press it, snap it, work it, quick erase it, write it, cut it, paste it, save it, load it, check it, quick rewrite it, plug it, play it, burn it, rip it, drag and drop it, zip, unzip it, lock it.
This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. Reality singing competitions have created their fair share of pop stars over the years. One of the newest additions to the club is Pentatonix. The Texas-based a cappella group won NBC's The Sing-Off back in 2011. Since then, they've put out two full-length albums, plus a Christmas EP. They've also racked up hundreds of millions of YouTube views, and they're joining us here on Soundcheck today. Getting us started with a song called Love Again, this is Pentatonix, live on Soundcheck.
Taste the pain right on my tongue. Nova came to make me numb. Don't you worry, cause the night is young. Dance until the morning sun. Morning sun, morning sun, morning, morning, morning. Believe I let you pull me down to this place. You stole my heart and soul just to think that I had dried those tears from your face. I played such a foolish game, feeling you were everything to me more. I don't mean to point the blame, but baby, you hurt me to my very core. You don't know why, you don't know.
Learn to love again. Learn to love again. Until the morning sun. You don't know why, you don't know how, you don't know when to love again. You left me and then shut me out. You have to learn to love again. Love again, love again, love again, love again.
How much did you earn?
You don't know why, you don't know how, you don't know when to love again.
That is Pentatonix live in the Soundcheck studio with their song Love Again. You can hear Pentatonix's latest full-length called PTX Volume 2. They also have an EP out right now called PTXmas. And let me introduce you to the members of Pentatonix. Scott Hoying in the center playing. Would you be the tenor in the band?
Baritone.
The baritone.
Yeah.
Okay. Because it seems like those usual SATB, soprano, alto, tenor, bass, uh-huh. seems like those things are kind of up for grabs with.
Yeah, it's definitely all over the place with us.
Because to your immediate left is Mitch Grassi. And Mitch, there's a girl in the band, but you seem to be the high voice.
Yeah, I do. I do sing some of the higher parts sometimes, but I'm technically the tenor.
Okay. There was a lot of stuff way above the tenor range in that song coming out of your mouth. Kirsty Maldonado with us as well. Hi, Kirsty.
Hi.
So are you a soprano as well?
Yeah, I mean, I'm a mezzo-soprano, so I just cover just whatever notes need to be covered.
Okay. Avi Kaplan playing the bass.
Yes, sir.
Well, that makes it sound like you're playing a bass guitar, singing the bass part.
Yes, that's me.
And Kevin Olushala doing the beatboxing. And
yes, sir.
Vocal percussion and stuff like that,
yes,
which
sir.
Is a little bit of a different sound for you know, a lot of a cappella groups. But so is doing an original song. Scott, who wrote Love Again?
Love Again was written by Kevin and Avi.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and then we just all got together after it was written and we arranged it as a group.
Now, you know, most a cappella groups we think of as doing covers, which, you know, you guys certainly have done and continue to do. Is this something you're trying? Is this a new direction that you're trying to, like, really stake out for yourselves? Is that a group that writes its own material?
Yeah. We're trying to take a cappella to the next level. And so, I mean, we've done really well with covers thus far, but our goal in the end is to be an original artist. And so we're starting to write music, and we're going to kind of see how our fans like it, and it should be a fun journey.
Well, covers were what won you guys the sing-off on NBC in 2011. What was it like being on a reality TV show?
It's crazy. It's way more work than I thought it would be. Like, we would have hours and hours of rehearsal every day.
Yeah, we were constantly busy.
And never have a day off. And if we did take a day off, which we did one week, we ended up getting so behind that we never did it again. And so it was just kind of crazy how much you work on a reality show.
How long
this particular one.
And how long were you involved in? How long was the process?
Like two and a half months.
11 episodes, 2.5 months, yeah.
What did that experience do to Pentatonix? What were you guys, and I use guys in the gender neutral sense here, what were you guys going into that competition? What are you now coming out of it?
I think going into it was crazy because we didn't know each other that well yet, and we didn't know how we arranged. We didn't know anything. And so we kind of went in just kind of thinking it was going to be a fun thing and we'd get eliminated pretty much immediately. And then as we worked together and got to know each other, we were like, wait, this could be something special. And we learned how to arrange just in a group by ear. And it was such a challenge. But once we started to get into the rhythm of how we do things, it just started taking off.
But now I don't want to give people the impression that some TV producers was a kind of Svengali figure and put you guys together. I mean, you know, you didn't know each other that well, but you formed this band yourselves, right?
Yes. Well, three of us grew up together, so three of us knew each other super well our whole lives.
That's you and Mitch and Kirsty?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then we found Avi and Kevin. Kevin, who we found on YouTube, and then Avi, we found through a mutual friend.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mentioned in the sort of intro that you guys have hundreds of millions of YouTube views. There's 27 million just for your Evolution of Music video. which must be a copyright disaster.
Oh, my goodness.
What is that, like 2 or 3 dozen songs in a four-minute piece?
Yeah, around 30. I don't know, 28 to 32. I don't even remember. But
going from the year 1100 to, like, last year.
Yeah.
Right.
So that looks like a lot of fun, but also the kind of thing you're probably not going to be releasing commercially anytime soon.
Correct.
Yeah, probably not performing that on any TV shows or anything.
Yeah.
So, but going into the realm of covers, how do you guys make that decision? How do you decide what's a song that Pentatonix can actually do something new with?
Usually we just talk it over as a group. Some people.
Boy, it's so easy to tell when Avi's
right. That's Kirsty.
Well, it's very easy.
That was actually Kirsty. No, but we usually someone will bring a song to the group, and then we usually choose that one. We rarely, if someone is passionate about a song, we rarely are like, let's not do it. We always give it a shot, but usually ends up happening because usually if one person's passionate about it, we'll all become passionate about it. And then, I mean, sometimes we do voting things with our fans on Facebook or Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, usually it's a collaborative effort. We all definitely decide on something.
All right. Who brought Hey Mama to the group?
It was a combination of Kevin and I. Kevin came to us and was like, I have this crazy cool verse, blah, blah, blah. And he was singing it to us. And we were like, that's so awesome. And so we just kind of had it for months. And he was like, I still don't have a chorus to it. And then one day at the airport, we were discussing covering Hit the Road Jack.
Mm-hmm.
And I was thinking, what if we combined Hit the Road Jack with that verse that you've had for so long? And so we kind of put the two together, and it became this mashup of an originals, and then it samples Hit the Road Jack, and it ended up being such a fun song. Yeah. Now it's one of our favorite to perform.
You want to perform it for us?
We would love
Absolutely.
To.
Absolutely.
All right. We're speaking with Pentatonix. The band is performing here in the Soundcheck studio today, their latest full-length record called PTX Volume 2. This, though, a live performance of their song, Hey Mama.
One, two, three.
I'm a gentleman, let me see ya. My independent women, let me see ya. I'm a gentleman, let me see ya. My independent women, let me see ya.
Hey mama, I don't want no drama, but the way you look ain't making me smile. Hey baby, I know you were a lady, but you lose your dress, girl, I'm liking your style.
Boy,
I know that you don't want to be bothered, but
you,
baby,
yeah,
you made me want to holler.
You
know that I am into you,
why you got to say it?
Hit the road, Jack, don't you come back no more,
no more, no more, no more.
Hit the road, Jack, don't you come back no more.
Don't you come back no more.
Hit the road, Jack. Hey mama, I know you got a problem, cause the men back then have been all wrong. Hey baby, I know I'm kinda crazy,
but your size means where you belong.
Hey, just to let you know, I'll make you feel better. Think you have a couple for now and forever. Did we have the chance? Let me be your man.
Why you got to say
it's wrong, Jack? Don't you come back no more,
no more, no more. Yeah. see ya. Let me see ya. Gentlemen, let me see ya. Independent women, let me see ya.
Nicely done. Pentatonix, live in the Soundcheck studio with Hey Mama, which includes some of Hit the Road, Jack, which was made famous by Ray Charles, though I don't think he actually wrote it, but that gets woven into that song from the band Pentatonix, performing live here on Soundcheck. Guys, your fans, the Pentaholics, as yes. they're known, are threatening to break Twitter. They're just like tweeting us all of these questions, a couple of interesting ones, too. Roxy on Twitter wants to know, do any of the Pentatonix members have any guilty pleasures? Any guilty pleasure guilty listening pleasure. Favorites, you know?
Oh, musical guilty pleasures. Oh,
yeah, man. You know, I mean, the song that you don't want everybody else to know. So just between you, me, and the millions listening in.
Right.
I have a good one.
All right, yeah. Mitch?
Let It Go from the Frozen movie. You know the movie Frozen?
So
the whole Frozen soundtrack.
It's so good. It's so
I haven't good. Seen it yet.
It's
you would a like good it.
I haven't seen it either, but the song is very, very good.
Yeah, so I went in expecting to be like, oh, it's a Disney movie animated, but I was like living for it. I was crying.
Don't let them in, don't let them see. Be the good girl you always have to be. Conceal, don't feel, don't let them know. Well, now they know. Let it go. Let it go.
Will this be pentatonicized at some point?
Maybe.
I'd be down. Maybe. You singing Let It Go would be fierce.
All right. Jamie Lee wants to know, what's the most difficult song to cover?
Oh,
to cover?
Well, one that we do.
Of the ones you do.
Oh. I would say Evolution of Music was very hard to arrange, and it's very hard to sing because it has so many different tonal centers. It just keeps changing keys. Yeah.
One of the great things about that Evolution of Music video, and again, because of all the different songs, people will have to go to YouTube to watch it. It's not going to be on a record. too many rights to clear. But the great thing about it is how you segue seamlessly, often in a matter of a second or two, from one song, you know, from the 1970s to the next song from the 1980s.
No, 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 no.
Mamma mia, mamma mia,
mamma mia, let me go. Beelzebub has the devil put aside for me, for me, for me. Celebrate good times, come on.
Celebration, celebration.
Oh, don't stop. Believe it,
cause this is
thriller night.
Sometimes it can fall apart, but we've actually been okay.
Okay, performance-wise,
it's never been bad. But when we were first rehearsing it and arranging it, we were like, "What did we get ourselves into?"
Tiffany wants to know: aside from fame and touring, what's been the biggest change in your lives since forming Pentatonix?
It was like growing up, going to school and then going to college, it was like you have this schedule and you have to be here, then in the next year you're going to have to be there, then. And now it's like we're making our own schedule and making our own decisions, and it's just that was kind of crazy because we were thrown into it. It was like, okay.
There's a lot of freedom that comes with it.
There's a lot of freedom that comes with it, which is cool. It's just totally a change.
Well, now, you know, when we think of a cappella groups, especially in this country, it's very often associated with colleges. Mm-hmm. So now, you got three of you, Scott, met in high school. Were you also singing together in college?
No. The three of us were in like show choir and a million choirs in high school together, but then we went to different colleges, mm-hmm. and I joined an a cappella group in college, too.
Kevin, you graduated like from Yale, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was an East Asian Studies major in pre-med.
East Asian Studies and pre-med.
Yep.
So lay a little Mandarin on me.
好，行，您好，我非常的高兴能够来这儿给你们表演啊，谢谢，非常的感谢。
Casual.
Show off.
Y'all funny. I made it up. It didn't mean anything.
Same.
The funny thing is Mandarin is a pitched language. It's a tonal language.
It
so
is.
There's a little bit of singing involved because the words will change meaning, right?
Depending yeah. on oh, my gosh. Them. I've had problems with that because I remember I told a girl on the bus, I thought I told her to ask, I could ask her any question, but I told her I would kiss her. So, yeah. So when means to ask and when means to kiss. So I messed that up and I got hit on the bus, so I won't do that again.
Nice. And where was this?
This was in Beijing.
Okay. I thought maybe you were going to say, like, Mott Street.
Oh, no. This was straight up in Beijing.
So how long was it when Beyonce surprised everybody with her new record before you guys started pulling it apart and thinking, can we do this song? Can we do that song?
No,
like
no
0 seconds.
I'm not kidding.
The second
I saw that tweet, I was listening to the whole album.
Yeah.
Well, we're going to wrap up with a little bit of Evolution of Beyonce from Pentatonix. Guys, thank you so much for being with us on Soundcheck today.
Now that you're out of my life, I'm so much better. You thought that I'd be weak without you, but I'm stronger. You thought that I'd be broke without you, but I'm richer. Because my body's too bootylicious for you, baby.
Drum machines like the Roland 808 fueled the sound of some of the greatest dance and hip-hop tracks of all time. And that sound lives on in the tools used to create pop hits today. Up next, a short history of the drum machine. This is Soundcheck. This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. Some people collect stamps. Others collect baseball cards. Joe Mansfield collects drum machines. The Boston-based producer and music historian has about 150 of them, and about half of his collection is featured in a new book called Beatbox, A Drum Machine Obsession. He joins me now on the line from the Boston area. Hi, Joe.
Hi.
So you were a record collector first, right?
I did. I started out collecting records. It was, you know, I guess I was really obsessed about that also.
Was there a particular record that kind of sparked your interest in drum machines?
I like to think it was, Sly Stone's Family Affair.
Mm-hmm.
As a kid, I would remember my mother would play the Riot Going On album, and it was really stood out to me.
Mm-hmm.
And at the time, I wouldn't have known there was drum machines in it, but I kind of felt like it sounded different than everything she would play.
Somebody that just loves to learn, and another child grows up to be somebody you just love to burn. Mom loves the both of them, you see it's in the blood. Both kids are good and bound. Thicker than the mud, it's a family affair.
Family Affair, Sly and the Family Stone. A hit single from them in the early 70s. And although he didn't know it at the time, Joe Mansfield was listening to the Maestro Rhythm King MRK-2. Now, Joe, what was the MRK-2?
It's a box-shaped drum machine. It had a bunch of preset rhythms. Another cool thing it had was it had some small little pads that you could actually trigger some of the drum sounds to sort of accompany the rhythm.
So you would have like a mumba rhythm or a samba rhythm or something like that. But then you could press a button and get a little fill in there or something. We're speaking with Joe Mansfield, a collector of drum machines. He now has 150 of them, and he's the author of the new book, Beatbox, A Drum Machine Obsession. The history of drum machines, it really begins with the Wurlitzer Sideman, which was what? That's basically an accessory to the Wurlitzer organ that many homes had, right?
It was standalone. I mean, I'm sure people bought it without having the organ. I mean, it was basically used by like lounge musicians or in like maybe churches or just anywhere where you had an organ or you wanted some percussion.
And the Musicians Association asked Wurlitzer to stop making this thing, right? They were worried that drummers would actually be put out of work.
You know, in my research, I've seen you know, that might have happened, yeah. But I don't know how really worried they were, but it was a point they made.
Yeah, which is interesting because when we talked to the singer-songwriter Shuggy Otis, who, you know, the song Strawberry Letter 23, we spoke to him earlier this year, and he made a comment that would have made the Musicians Union cringe. Listen to this.
Yeah, I was one of the first to use the drum machine on the record.
it helped me lay tracks.
Right.
But at first, you know, when I got it, I'd go home and I could play with it like anytime I wanted to, and have my own little private drummer there who wouldn't talk back to me. And he'd keep perfect time, you know.
Songs Out of My Head by Shuggy Otis, talking there about his early use of the drum machine. So, Joe, we're talking early 70s still here.
Exactly. It definitely was that. I mean, I think a lot of musicians would have used them in that way and put their songs together before they went in the proper studio and used it as a writing tool. And I think they kind of liked what they came up with and kept it in there, you know, instead of switching it out for real drums, you know.
So how did these drum machines go from, you know, a box with a limited number of rhythms where you press a button and it plays? How did they go from that to something that, you know, musicians could program, could actually create whole rhythms and more intricate rhythms and changing rhythms?
I mean, it's just changing technology. I mean, one of the earlier ones was called an EKO computer drum. It was... it was made in about 1972, and this was one of the earlier ones, and that's kind of, that machine, you can kind of trace the technology of that machine to machines like the TR-808, just similar.
Now, the TR-808, that was made by Roland, and that is a drum machine that is so ubiquitous in the music world that Kanye West even refers to it in one of his album titles. What's the deal with the 808?
I mean, the 808 is, the thing about that always stood out is the bass drum in that thing. It was just this big sounding bass drum that was really unique. Also, at the time it came out, compared to some of the other machines like the Lin LM1, and DMX, Oberheim DMX, it was a lot less expensive. So,
what are we talking about price wise here?
So it came out in 1980. And it was $1,000, but I mean, obviously that is a lot of money in 1980, right? So it's a real lot of money. But the LM1 was about $5,000, and the like an LM1 you could probably buy a car with the amount you're going to spend on that, right?
Yeah.
It still wasn't going to be put in the bedroom of every musician, but it was definitely within reach to a lot of them.
So when we heard Afrika Bambaataa's early hip-hop classic, Planet Rock, were we listening to the 808? Was that the drum machine he used?
Yes, that was the 808. That's, you know, the backbone of that whole song is the 808.
Well, let's hear Afrika Bambaataa with Planet Rock featuring his Roland 808 drum machine.
Chase your dreams. Love out your seats. Make your body sweat. Socialize. Get down. Let your soul lead the way. Can't you shake it now? Go, ladies. It's a living dream. Love the life you live. Come play the game. Our world is free. Do a 12-foot scream.
Planet Rock from Afrika Bambaataa, made with the drum machine known as the Roland TR-808, a drum machine that would be especially important in hip-hop for the next, 20 years, Joe?
It still is.
Yeah. And funny thing there, you know, Planet Rock is built on the sounds of this drum machine and a melody that Afrika Bambaataa cribbed from the German band Kraftwerk. And they, too, were kind of pioneers in using drum machines, weren't they?
Yeah, they were. And that song, so the Kraftwerk Trans-Europe Express song, used a drum machine for the drums. They used a Vox Percussion King for the drum backbone of that song. They were early pioneers of, you know, drum machines.
speaking with Joe Mansfield about his book called Beatbox, A Drum Machine Obsession. You have 150 drum machines. Where do you keep them all?
They're kind of stacked up in my basement, you know. It's pretty much getting to a point where you can't move down there.
do they work?
Some of them are temperamental, you know, but they pretty much all work.
All right. Now, the book comes with you can download samples from some of your drum machines. And even the toy ones have kind of interesting sounds. Tell us about the Mattel BG's Rhythm Machine.
So they made a toy that happened to have a drum machine in it. I mean, it's not the greatest sounding drum machine in the world to me. I mean, Kraftwerk actually used that machine too. They didn't use the drum part of it. They used the keyboard part of it. Mm-hmm. But it's a cool looking machine, quirky.
It is a toy, and this is what it sounds like. So that's the Mattel Bee Gees Rhythm Machine. Then at the other end of the spectrum, Joe, the most valuable drum machine that you own is the Linn, the LM1. This is the one you told us before cost about $5,000 back in 1980. What made the Linn drum machine so useful and so different?
Basically, the Linn used sample sound, so Roger Linn would have recorded a drummer in the studio and recorded those onto a EEPROM computer chip where, you know, the TR-808 is synthesized. This is, you know, actual drum sounds.
So then how could you tell whether you were listening to a drummer or a Linn drum machine? Or couldn't you?
Yeah, I mean, you can never replace a drummer, so you'd be able to tell. Roger Linn wanted to try to make the machine programmable in a way so it would sound as much like a real drummer as possible.
Right. And, well, I would say mission accomplished, because when Prince released When Doves Cry, I think that fooled a lot of people who just thought, there's Prince with a funky drummer. Listen to the beginning of When Doves Cry from Prince. So that's the Linn LM1, invented by Roger Linn, who would later go on to found his own record label, in fact. The most recent drum machine in your book is from 1984, the Sequential Circuits Studio 440. Why is that? That's almost 30 years ago. Are they not making drum machines anymore?
They still make them, you know, but most producers are gonna use plugins and a software program that would have, you know, thousands of drum sounds in it. So, mm-hmm. you know, you don't have to have a basement full of drum machines now. You can have a thumb drive full of them, you know.
Right.
But, I mean, the real ones, they definitely have a different sound. They're warmer than the, you know, samples, and they're grittier.
So people are still using these old machines, but it's kind of it's sort of knowingly retro.
Yeah, I mean, you know, most pop hits you hear today, there's a drum machine in there, you know, or a sample of one of these classic drum machines. You know, you'll always hear a sampled version of the 808, you mm-hmm. know, pretty much every year there's going to be a hit record on the pop charts that still uses the sounds or a hybrid of those sounds, you know, so they're still used, even if the people aren't using the actual machines, the sounds of those machines are still very relevant in pop music today.
All right, now Joe, what's your great white whale? What's a classic drum machine that you do not have in your collection?
The EKO is the one I want. It's
the first programmable one.
It's super cool. It's got a big footprint. It's really big, and it's if you can find one, they're really expensive. So I don't know if I can ever bring myself to buy one. I had the opportunity to buy one last year, but it was like $10,000, and I couldn't bring myself to do it.
Well, you can console yourself with a whole basement full of these things. 150 of these drum machines, many of them collector's items. They are in Joe Mansfield's home, and about half of them in his new book called Beatbox, A Drum Machine Obsession. Joe, thanks very much for being with us.
Oh, thank you.
That's music from the French composer Jean-Michel Jarre and his album-length piece called Oxygène, built entirely out of electronic instruments, keyboards mostly, and something he called the Rhythmin computer, which later turned out to be the good old Korg Mini Pops drum machine. And that does it for Soundcheck today. Our program is a production of WNYC. Irene Trudell leads our engineering team with Paul Schneider, Bill O'Neill, and Jason Isaac. The show is produced by Katie Bishop and Mike Katziff, with Isaac Davey Aronson, Amy Pearl, Krista Ripple, and our intern Alex Martinez. Our executive producer is Joel Meyer. I'm John Schaefer. This is Soundcheck.